I'm just so sick of these people complaining about socialism. Good Lord, folks. Haven't you been paying any attention to what they do with your tax money?
Not much.
Hey, it's okay if we bomb them into the Stone Age with your taxes. It's not okay if you know, you fix my broken arm with it. Suddenly, that's a communism. I'm just sick of this crap. What else did it, in the 60s when Medicare popped up? We had Medicare for our senior citizens who came into law. Was that during Johnson's term?
Yes, it was.
Johnson was huge. We had civil rights.
Oh, that was the Great Society, and that was him full. There are those among us who would say that was his attempt at extirpation. No. Is it extirpating? Is it extirpating I'm after? He was trying to make good on previous sins regarding the passing of said JFK. Hence the Great Society.
Well, building, you know.
But by the same token, let's mention in this same breath that from the moment that Johnson signed Medicare into law, 11 months later, Harry Truman was the first person given Medicare. 11 months. Now, if we consider the scope of this public option that is being allegedly brought to the floor of the Senate, which Joe says he will hear lip hell to stop, under the best of circumstances, I think we're still in that scenario where it don't kick in till 2013, so the opt-out won't happen till 2014? That's 2009, that's 5 times 4, 20. Hey, yeah, that's 225,000 dead Americans.
That's right.
I can do simple math on the fly.
I never could figure out why their scenario was gonna take that long. I don't know. I could not. Nothing else seems to take that long. If you want to just go attack Iraq, I believe we can be doing that in a couple hours. Maybe just penciling in about $3 trillion for that. Something's weird. Maybe I've just been asleep. I just woke up. That's what it is. I was born under a walnut tree last night, and I woke up and I started reading the Declaration of Independence. Right? We decide that we are a free, self-governing, egalitarian country. Then I picked up the Constitution and explained all how that we were going to implement all that stuff. And then you look around, and then there's this huge board with this disclaimer. Note, these represent ideal conditions. If you
experience...
I keep going to that.
It's a beautiful little theme you got working for you there, Reverbo. And by the way, Marty has chimed in and says, yes, there was an Apollo 17. That is, if you believe they weren't all faked.
There's that, too. See, we there you go. That's a beautiful country. We actually have to, you know, put up with people that think like that, too. But that's harmless, you know.
Yeah, that is harmless. I get
it. America used to have what was known as lovable cranks. And these are people like Hannity and Limbaugh and your friend who believes that they actually, instead of landing on the moon, they landed somewhere in Utah.
And we're immediately overpowered by green Mormons.
Exactly. Well, that's
and never heard from again.
Yeah, Scientology sort of came out of that, right? That's the religion where there's a flying saucer landing in a desert, and if you don't give...
Well, isn't that why Neil Armstrong's out of step in that one picture of the three astronauts walking across? Oh wait, that's the Beatles.
The Beatles didn't land on the moon, I don't think.
Well, John and George did, but they didn't have to have a machine to get them there.
I am completely confused. Well, I got one more pithy statement, and then I will let you go. I'm on a pith roll here. How about this one? The foundation of our freedom is also the source of our frustration.
Ooh. Ooh.
No, if you want to figure out why it's one step forward and two steps back.
And that fits nicely with that Neil Gabler column from several months back. you know, the one that said, you know, the reason that America can't solve great crises is that America was not designed to solve great crises.
Well, we evidently have to live with this incredible dilemma. It's the freedom. It's the freedom responsibility. And you can't seem to legislate responsibility. And so we got millions of people, because I can't even imagine how many people listen to this radio show across the universe. Now everybody's thinking we didn't really land on the moon.
But
the Beatles landed on the moon instead, which we, oh, my.
Now, you got Marty all lit up. He said, now, wait a minute. I didn't say I believe they were fake. I know people who do. However, I must say that considering the lies of the Bush government in the past 8 years, all government statements must be considered suspect until proof is verified.
Well, Lord knows I never believe the official story doesn't usually ring true for me ever. It's sad, isn't it, though?
Oh, yeah, well, it's like the most recent statement about the helicopter that crashed in Afghanistan. And any helicopter that crashes in Afghanistan, there's immediately a sentence, much like that little sentence, you know, if you experience it. There's a statement that comes from the Pentagon that says, the helicopter crashed today in Afghanistan, and enemy action, and the Afghans didn't shoot it down. No, they didn't. No, really, quit saying that. The Afghans didn't shoot the damned helicopter down. At which point, the entire world goes,
yeah.
You know, we used to read this in Russian Cyrillic script, and it didn't read any better that way either. Yes, they did.
When Walter Cronkite said that to me, I believed him. But were we making, as it turns out, we were right to believe him, too. But now it's all got twisted, now it's all done a 180. Now you can't believe any of it. I mean, now, look, the sad part is that most people don't have the time or the inclination to seek out the truth. Assuming there is truth on the Internet, assuming there's truth, you know, in West Virginia, assuming there's truth, this takes time. And Americans are very idealistic, and they're, you know, this goes back to, you know, the DDT is going to kill us in 40 years, and if I keep blowing up mountains, I can get a paycheck in 2 weeks. I can be drinking beer in front of my big screen TV in 2 weeks. So I don't give a shit.
Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die.
Well, sounds pretty good.
Oh, and by the way, you mentioned when Walter Cronkite said it, you believed it?
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you the other side of that coin. Britt Hume.
Yeah.
On the criticism of Fox by the White House. We may be number one, but there is sort of an insurgent quality of Fox News, and that's kind of our attitude. Hoist the Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit. This is tremendous fodder for us, my lord. We've been living on it.
Grief. That's what he said?
Hoist a Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit.
What a class act.
Well, I don't know why I didn't just say hoist a Jolly Roger, load up the sawed-off shotgun, and head for the nearest Unitarian Universalist church, because that's the reality. But at least we finally now have an admission.
In case it's with our money. People don't. I love it. I love the idea that we've got the other side. We've got our opponents right where we want them. It is the perfect storm. They are. It couldn't be more marginalized. Couldn't be. It's just we've got everything we want now. We got the executive. We got justice. We got the Senate. We got the House. We've got what? Only one in five people even identify themselves as a Republican. This couldn't be better. And then on the other hand, we have people who, the majority of people just don't have the time or the inclination to move it, that extra step. It's begging. It's on the edge of the cliff. All it needs is somebody to just go poof
Yeah, that one, that one little tiny grain of sand that falls out from under the boulder and then just...
Yeah, that's all, yeah, exactly. Well, you got an assignment this week. You got to come back with the gold.
Hoo-wee. That's a tall order. I better take a bigger suitcase.
Well, we want only good news, Nick.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat.
I love it. Gas, and make sure they pay you in gold, too. Oh, God. All right. Make it as personal as you can make it this week.
Yeah, if this ain't personal, that can't be found.
All right. And don't forget that that disclaimer. It'll come in handy.
You know, I need that in writing.
I can supply that.
Do please. And by the way, thanks for the note last night. I was going to open the program with it, actually, until Joe Lieberman decided to take a big steaming dump on my day.
It was, and you did the right thing. But yes, every now and then, I would say part of the last night's show, definitely on the Greatest Hits album.
Beautiful.
We were crying over here.
You and the Possum Goddess?
Anyway, keep up the good work.
All right, later, Reverbo.
All right, then.
Bye now. Critic at large, Reverbo. High priest of the Possum Goddess. Let's keep it rolling. I hope. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me go inside. All right, that's better.
All better now?
Yeah, that those were the waves that the Horn Palace retreat for special privileged VIP members.
Yes.
It's really a nice place, Bob. Everyone should go.
Oh, there with the waves of the North Atlantic crashing on the rocky shores of Maine.
Yeah, everybody should go, but, only the click can go, only the click. But don't worry, I'll send you postcards to people that will never get a chance to go.
Yeah.
But it's nothing like being there. Nothing.
Oh, rub it in, why don't you?
Oh, well, you know. So, this healthcare thing has really got me at a point of, let me put it this way. I don't believe anything that I'm told anymore regarding the issue of healthcare, Bob.
Down the rabbit hole, huh?
No, it's not so much I don't believe it. I mean, when somebody gives me a number, how much it's going to cost, and what they're going to do for us, and so forth, I like to take that number and I like to triple it, quadruple it, and just tweak the numbers even more, because that's what I believe they want to stick us. They always want to stick us with the bill. I don't believe that.
Well, you know, it's if we were to have universal single payer health care, I would expect to be stuck with the bill. But the things that would come with the cost reductions that would come with single payer health care, my God, we're already paying for it. We're just not getting it.
And that's what I'm talking about. When you have a for-profit model, but at the same time, when you have a for-profit model of healthcare on healthcare, and you have a citizens and popular, and I'm sorry to tell a lot of people who still think this, but a significant amount of this population is going to remain ignorant, no matter what you put in front of them. And it's what I call the dead weight theory. It's what brings us down. It's what doesn't keep us from progressing. And it's also what keeps us bogged down in wars, one after the other, like back-to-back sequels almost. And this brings me to my point about the situation with Obama. Obama, our president, and his cabinet and his administration, they're not Jedi's people. They're not political masterminds. And they have no idea how to handle a war. You want to know why? Because most of them have never even experienced it. Most of them have.
Well, there is that.
Most of them have never. See, so that's why I say Obama isn't a Jedi. I always say this, and I don't care who I get make mad. Obama isn't a Jedi. He isn't Luke Skywalker. He isn't the most brilliant man in the universe. And let's just add insult to injury, He isn't even a Jawa, for Christ's sake. He can't make junk into gold, and that's what Jawas could do.
Is he Lando Calrissian?
No, I don't think he's even Lando Calrissian, because he had Cloud City. Obama doesn't have Cloud City, so there you go.
Let me take this down a different road while people stack up my emails as to who Obama is in Star Wars.
Yeah.
He ain't Yoda.
He could be the bounty hunter, Boba Fett.
He could be Boba Fett.
Because he has a rocket missile on his back, and he does have a penchant for hunting down terrorists. He doesn't have the carbonite, though. Is he going to put a Bin Laden in carbonite? But we all know what happened to. I don't want to give a spoiler to Boba Fett, but it doesn't end well for him.
No, but while the comparisons do stack up in my email box.
Yeah.
Let me turn something, just go in a different, slightly different direction along the same lines as what you're talking about. And I don't know how to say this more succinctly. And I say this coming from that national security place that seems to be our overarching national fetish, David.
Mm-hmm.
You know, national security, damn it. National security. National security, Your Holiness. National security. 9/11. When it comes to building bombs and missiles and really fast airplanes that can't fly in the rain, cost is no object. Money is no object. And frankly, those things are of limited utility if you don't have a nation to defend. Okay? So along those lines, David, and I'm not saying this in response to you. I'm just saying this as a statement of my own general philosophy. I don't give a good damn how much universal single payer health care costs. Having a well citizenry is the single most important national security issue that this nation faces. And as a consequence of that, we should apply the same rules to universal single-payer health care that we apply to bombers and bombs and bullets and boats. And cost should not be an issue. We're going to have it. We are going to pay for it because, you know, as we have seen in these little misadventures in Afghanistan and Iraq, You can have all the 23rd century gee golly whiz bang Johnny speed skates weapons in the world, but if you don't have enough people to be on the streets and in the valleys and in the mountains and by the streams and in the swamps, you lose. And so as a consequence of that, I don't care what the Congressional Budget Office says it would cost for every single American to have universal single-payer health care. I suspect that the reality of it is that if you imagine an economic model in which the for-profit insurance companies go, and you replace it with universal single-payer health care, then what you find out is it doesn't cost that much. And it doesn't begin to approach the cost of this god-awful misadventure in Afghanistan and Iraq and wherever else we're contemplating misadventures. And it's a net gain for the people of the United States. You can't build an infantry out of people who cannot walk. You cannot make a battle-hardened battalion out of people who can't pass a stress test. And frankly, this is an overarching thing that probably goes beyond healthcare and into the realms of how we go about the day-to-day business of being us and what we eat and how we eat it and how we train doctors and how we treat food and how we treat each other.
Well, I do think part of the problem is the fact that healthcare in general, I think here's where I differ a bit from the horn community and most of the people. I don't trust when someone tells me, this is how the system is going to work, and this is how it's going to be, and you're going to pay into this system, and then you see who's attached to the bill, and you see a long line of parasites, and you just see add-on after add-on, and it's almost like it's meant to make us scramble, which it is. It's meant to make us scramble. It's meant to make us crawl our way. And another thing, one thing that really gets me about this is the fact that I detest this, Bob, is when a liberal portion of the audience, I'll use John's term, is says, well, we got to take care of the undocumented citizens. Well, the problem with that is nobody really wants to take care of the undocumented citizens, foreigners, i.e., because they want to treat them like animals, Bob. Because just like the Rahsaan Roland Kirk song, we keep them undocumented for a reason. That's volunteer slavery. That way we can keep paying them under the table. They won't get the health care. And that's and
they won't be on the workers' comp rolls, and they won't
right.
be liable to receive unemployment compensation, and they can't demand minimum wage.
And then that's part of the problem I have with we need to do something about the undocumented citizens in this country not getting the proper wages and anything like that. If we can somehow
look at the amount of money and you know, one of the things that the right wing loves to prattle on about, David, is them illegal aliens. They make all that money and then they go to the Western Union and they send it all back to Mexico. There's millions of dollars being drained out of the American economy going back to Mexico every day. Right? You've heard it. I know you have.
Right.
Well, instead of that, let's take the people who are here, welcome them to this country with open arms, and say, but it comes with strings attached. And they're the same strings that are attached to the rest of us. And it's called FICA, and it's called payroll withholding, and it's called Social Security, and it's called Medicare and Medicaid, and you're on the hook for it with the rest of us.
And that's what I'm getting at.
And then if you do that at the same time that you lower the Social Security retirement age to 55 years old, something that I was arguing for a couple of years ago that Tom Hartman picked up on as well.
Right.
If you do that and you raise and you eliminate the ceiling on Social Security taxed earnings and just say, welcome to America, this benefits all of us, problem solved.
Well, you know, Bob, The whole thing about the immigration process, it's always struck me as there's a reason why it's so slow and so bureaucratic, and I don't think it's because that's the way it has to be. I believe that we do live in a volunteer slavery society, and we need a certain segment of the population that are undocumented citizens, and I'm beginning to think that. That they never intend to give citizenship to a lot of people. They make them keep jumping through these loopholes. When to me, it should be as simple as, do you love this country? Do you want to pay taxes? Well, do you believe in the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence? Do you think this is a we society versus a me society? Do you believe in a we society? Do you want to make this work and try to help us? Okay, congratulations, you're American, but we don't do that. Instead, we make them jump through loophole after hoop after hoop, like a trained circus dolphin, or rather a SeaWorld dolphin. And I don't know. I have a big problem with the fact that a lot of the Democrats and a lot of the liberals want to encourage the same process, the same system, ICE. All of the
I have a problem with a lot of so-called mainstream Democrats with a lot of issues. I have, you know, whether it's the war or, you know, the blue dogs or health care or, you know, fundamental issues of basic freedom as set forth in the Constitution. I got lots of problems. But you know what? I think with enough popular support, we can solve those problems for the Democratic Party. The Republican Party is a dead letter David. You know, they are. They're just a rump. They're the last tattered danglings of the old Confederacy, a bunch of cranky old doughy white guys, and they're done. Their sun is setting. But if we don't manifest, real and substantive change inside the Democratic Party right now, starting yesterday, then we're going to have the same old problem again, and it'll devolve into the same place that the Republicans are now.
You really believe that we can, because again, this is something I guess I disagree with a lot of people when it comes to the Democratic Party. Do you really believe we can turn around the Democratic Party with the current population of citizens that we have now? I think most of America is brain dead. I hate to say that. In terms of what they care about, what they're passionate about, what's important to them, it seems like they miss the boat every single time. And we don't have a nation of critical thinkers. And this is why I keep saying the deck continues to get stacked and stacked. And just when you think you figured out the whole deck is stacked and all the rig points, more of the deck is stacked in that way. I mean, let's look at something that happened. I give kudos to Matthew Ho today, who came out against the Obama administration and said, I don't understand why we're here. I don't understand what is the point of this mission. No one wants to give me any answers. And you know what he said, Bob? This is why I think we have a lot of bandits on D.C. and that why we have a lot of bandits in the Obama administration. He said they tried to offer him a bribe for a job during an interview on CNN. Oh, you can't do that. Don't go out and say that. No. We'll give you a better position. But I don't believe in this mission. And I know that the people on the ground in Afghanistan restless as well. And they don't believe that this is a fruitful mission. And they don't believe that this is, they believe that this is a full-blown occupation, the citizens of Afghanistan. And nobody's giving me any answers. And they didn't have an answer for them. And then they didn't think he was going to come out this way either, Bob. They didn't think he had the balls to do this. And that's why I don't like, that's why I'm not really liking the Democratic Party. That's why I'm not really liking anyone having to do with the Obama administration. Because this is the truth. We're going to continue to go into Afghanistan. We're going to continue to blow shit up. We're going to continue and to continue to put my brand and my stamp and my ex next to a Democrat. After a while, you can't do that.
You got to come to the realization that the way the Constitution is set up does not do, and I know people don't like it when I say this, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff I don't like that's factual, too. The Constitution, as it is currently set up, does not admit for the rise of third-party politics. It admits for the, it tolerates the rise of a third party that supplants the weaker second party. And you're seeing that now. You're seeing the progress has been glacial within the scope of the human ability to comprehend because of the short nature of our existence.
Right.
But you are seeing it, for instance, in this contest between the Conservative Party and the Republican in New York State. You're seeing it in the rise of the Ron Paulistas, the so-called libertarians who are little more than Republicans who are pissed off because they can't get high. You're seeing it in that. Okay, you might be seeing it somewhat in the Greens, but and this is just my position, and again, it'll piss people off.
Right.
If the Greens want to change this nation, we desperately need their energies inside the Democratic Party. Because that weight can shift that, and go read about it, that weight can shift the Overton window back over to where we need it to be. I like Green Party politics. I absolutely respect it. I've voted for a Green candidate a time or two. But I do not engage myself in the fruitless notion that there are going to be three parties competing for power in the United States when it's simple. It's not set up to be that way. You know, it started out, David, in a way that could be that way when the Constitution said that the winner of the presidential ballot, the winner of the Electoral College vote, will be the president. And then it originally said, and the guy who comes in second will be the vice president. Consequently, you get John Adams, vice president to George Washington. You get Thomas Jefferson, vice president to John Adams. And then ultimately you get Aaron Burr, vice president to Thomas Jefferson. And by that time, three presidencies, everybody looked around and went, oh, crap, this is not working. Because what you wound up is having a guy second in command whose policies were frequently at cross purposes with the guy who was president, and it just created what they deemed to be a miserable experience. So that got checked and that got fixed. And we wound up with running mates. I mean, Jesus Christ, can you imagine if John McCain was vice president to Barack Obama? Just go there, just open that little the door to that little closet of horrors for just a crack and just look in and see all the spiders and snakes and everything scurrying around. Jesus, close that.
But you see, Bob, eventually it's going to be that. And we are having a train wreck in Iraq, and we're having a train wreck in Afghanistan. And yes, it would be worse, but eventually we're going to have to come to that point in our history. We can't keep running from it. That's what I'm saying. That's why we can't just, we have to change things. We have to vote for the lesser of two evils. We'll put the D. And, again...
But what else are you going to put?
You have to... Eventually, you're going to have to vote your conscience.
But voting your conscience, if we were talking about that lesser of two evils thing, that voting your conscience thing means stay home in November.
Well, not necessarily. What I'm saying is...
Because I can vote my conscience all day long for a Green Party candidate. I voted my conscience for governor this past election here in West Virginia. My conscience is not governor of West Virginia, and the mountains are still blowing up.
Well,
on the other hand, however, if we had, and I don't mean to piss people off, but it's a fact, if we had all that energy that went into that third partyism inside the Democratic Party raising hell and making it certain that people understood, we're not going to tolerate you. We will actively work against you, not in November when we don't have a freaking prayer. We're going to work against you in the primary, and we're going to start beating your ass. Then you'll get changes in policy.
Too many broken promises, too many lies to the people. See, that's not going to happen. The third party is going to continue to grow. And I know that makes a lot of Democrats pissed.
Well, no, it doesn't make me mad. It ain't going to work.
Oh, I understand that.
It can't work. It's not that I philosophically disagree. It's that I recognize that within the parameters of the structure which is established here, David, it won't work.
I understand what you're saying, but this party, to me...
What a third party serves as in a presidential election, what a third party serves as, if it can get enough votes,
yeah,
it serves as a lever or a warning to whomever of the two parties wins. Okay? The classic example is the presidential bids of Eugene V. Debs in the early 20th century. Because of the rumblings that Eugene V. Debs created, in part, you wind up with the social changes that you get in the FDR administration. Okay? You could also say that Ross Perot served as a warning to Bill Clinton not to get all liberal. Plus the fact that, the 1994 midterm elections, and that was... And see, that's what's coming. The 2010 midterm elections are coming. And I'm not lecturing at you. I hope you understand. This is just a discussion. The 2010 midterm elections are coming. And a lot of us who are still registered Democrats, like me, are sick of this mugwump brand of politics that is practiced in Washington, D.C., by people who call themselves Democrats but share virtually no political ideology with me and with us. Well, the time to make that, at the time to, well, we're past time to be working on that.
Right.
Because we don't need a third-party candidate running in November who's going to get beat either by the Republican or the Democrat. Because the third party, the third parties in the individual congressional districts have not built the base sufficient to win elections. We need, and I'm speaking on the left side of things, I suppose. Yeah, crazy leftist me wanting people to go to the doctor. I thought that was just kind of normal and middle of the road, but I guess not. I'm a commie. We need that energy. We need that energy of the Green Party in the primary season. Putting up candidates to run against these incumbent mugwump blue dog Democrats and beat their ass or at least scare the piss out of them so that they understand when they go into November, you don't get us unless you speak to our issues. How do you think the Republican Party, such as it was and is, and I'm not offering it as a model, but how do you think the Republican Party wound up where it is, where, you know, where somebody like Richard Nixon would be deemed a liberal Democrat by the Republican Party as it stands now? Where somebody like Barry Goldwater would be deemed a liberal by the Republican Party as it exists now? It was pushed there by activists on the hardcore right-wing side who dragged the Republican Party, kicking and screaming, just to the right of Mussolini. Now, by the same token, the Democratic Party, we can either sit around and piss and moan about it, or we can get to work and we can drag it kicking and screaming back to some land that we recognize as normal. Because they are verging to the right because they are responding to what they think is some sort of national movement to the right. How many times have we, I mean, after Barack Obama was elected, you know, scarcely... A little more than a year ago, how many times did we hear them say, right-wingers say, well, you know, it's, well, you know, that one may have won, but it's still a conservative nation. Horse feathers! But they created that impression. And we are, I think, in line with what Reverbo was saying, a very impressionable people.
Bob, I completely agree with you, but the problem is we've lost the anti-war left. And we're losing a big portion of the other part of the left that really wanted radical change. We're not going to have the momentum in the 2010 election to really get what it is that we want as a nation, because so many people have been deceived, and they're working on emotions. So there's no way to drag the Green Party candidates. There's nothing you can give them, because what they're seeing in Afghanistan right now and what they're seeing in Iraq right now in the daily news, what are you going to say to them, Bob? You can't say anything to them. You think Obama's going to he already said he wasn't going to change directions. I mentioned that.
Disgusted with it.
I know. That's the problem, Bob.
But you know what? I guess it's the way my political mind works. Because I'm disgusted with it, I have to stand in toe-to-toe and fight for what I believe in. I don't stick my thumb in my mouth and run off and pout in the corner because I don't like it.
I don't think it's so much running in the corner and, oh, they're doing it based on conviction. Eventually, this is what I say to a lot of Democrats. Eventually, you're going to have to come to terms with what direction this country is leading into.
I came to terms with it a long time ago. I know me some fascism when I see it, and I hate it, because I got family in the dirt from fighting fascism the last time.
I understand that, and that's why a lot of Green Party input.
And so I'm not willing to leave the fight. I'm not willing to quit the field. I'm tired of being part of a party that says, "Well, I didn't get what I want, so I'm leaving."
Well, that's the reality, though. You see it, and I see it. And that's why it's going to be almost impossible to bring back this faction of the left back. What are you going to give them with? What, Bob? What?
Yeah, but wait. Look at the great energy that's been stirred up by Dennis Kucinich and by Representative Alan Grayson. Look at how excited we get every time some Democrat actually stands up and sticks to his guns against one of these no-good, the proto-fascist conservatives.
That's true, and that's good, but that's candy thrown out. We know what's going to happen after that. We know that there's still corporate dominance control on our airwaves. The very notion that
But that's a different animal.
To me,
corporate control of the airwaves is a different animal. It's not going to be solved by the fairness doctrine. It's not going to be solved by political action, with the possible exception of the repeal of the media ownership rules, of you know, which I wholly and strongly support. What's going to change that is when Democrats, who call themselves Democrats, who aren't in political office but have the substantial bank accounts, realize and look up and get tired of having their asses whipped every day on the air by the likes of Britt Hume, who, for God's sakes, put this on the wall. What we say at Fox, hoist a Jolly Roger, pull out our daggers, and look for more throats to slit. Now when the Democratic money, that pours tons and tons of money into this cause and that cause, finally gets around to realizing that supporting all those causes will get a hell of a lot easier if they'll win the battle of ideas on the front end. When that happens, then a lot of the other things that you're talking about will happen as well. But they are separate creatures. There are problems that are solved politically, and there are problems that are solved in the so-called private sector by money. You know, I think one of the reasons, you're forever hearing the right winger say, well, you know, damn Democrat, all they ever want to do is throw money at a problem. Well, maybe the only reason we want to throw money at a problem, I don't know what else there is to throw. Maybe the only reason we want to throw money at a problem is that, you know, money usually solves them. How many problems would be solved here at the Horn with money? You know, we've got a small army of people busting their humps on a volunteer basis who have never been paid a blessed dime. And all they want to do is see us finally quit sweating from month to month our own survival.
And you know what? If the progressive left wanted to really fund, this is why I think a lot of this is a sham, Bob. If they wanted to fund and get their voice out to a larger audience, it would be a drop. It would be a drop in the proverbial bucket to do that for you guys. But they don't. And this goes into even a bigger issue, which is what remember what I said about legitimizing radicals? Making Sarah Palin into a clown and coming out with a parody book on the same day? That's not going to get you anything, except it's just going to brand Sarah Palin.
Somebody who was on the inside crowd said, "Hey, I want to do this," and the money said, "Go for it."
Yes, but
it's not what you know, it's who you know. You know, our buddy Glenn in the UK said the other day. He said, "I suspect it's a case of the old adage that charity begins at home and usually stays there." You know, fortunate for us, that is not the thinking that's been adopted by folks who share their time with us at the Horn, because we're still here after 4 years. But that is an attitude that obtains in the wider world of so-called Democratic Party politics. And it is the absolute God's honest truth. You know, where the right wing says, you want to fill the airwaves with 3 hours of hate and vitriol every day, and you're gonna wear the hell out of Democrats and be a partisan flack and hack? Here's a few million dollars. See if you can make it work. On the other hand, on our side, we go begging.
I hear what you're saying. But see, my point is that the left, what I meant when the going rouge and the going rogue thing and legitimizing radicals and all of that, is a big portion of the left loves to engineer these boogeymen that we have to deal with to make us fear, to make us buy into this political perspective, and to continue buying their publications and media, that's the way they keep us interested. Bob, what I'm saying is there literally people who are triggering threats out there from the right, from the right wing, making them bigger than life, and then we have to deal with them. That's why you're not getting your funding. This is why I all think this is a fucking sham. Remember, Arianna Huffington was a Republican strategist.
Yep.
Remember that, people. Do you think she really is for the people? No.
Well, some would say that she had her road to Damascus moment, and
she still drives a Hummer. She still does, and she wants to talk about the.
Maybe that's because she's an incredibly bad driver.
Oh, maybe so. But my point is that's why you're not getting your funding. The reason why you're not getting your funding is because if there is a sea change, and we do become a better nation, it's not profitable for a lot of the left. And Robert Perry talked about that in his column as well. And this is why I say, people, watch out for a big portion of this left. These people who focus on effing Sarah Palin are not your friggin' friends. They're out to put the focus on a clown, for God's sakes. Instead of talk about real issues while people are dying, our priorities are messed up. And again, people, that's why a lot of progressive and liberal causes never get off the ground. Because there's a lot of people on the left who want to keep us in the dirt. Because they're making fist after fist of cash and revenue. Understand that. Huffington Post is not your friend. A lot of these places are not your friend. They're all tied and colluded together to trigger boogeymen, so we talk about them. And how many hours have we spent on effing Sarah Palin? We need to get this straight, Bob. We need to understand. All of these people, they go in that diner together, they sit down, and they have their lobster and shrimp and hummingbird canapé together. While we keep getting the shaft, and we keep losing more and more and more. And you know who's doing that? Not the right-wing people. The left-wing is doing that. Think about it.
Well, check this out. This email just in from one of your comrades in the Brotherhood of Davidness.
Yeah.
One of the other Davids, David in Tennessee. I think we've got three Davids tonight so far. We're on a roll. David in Tennessee has said along the lines of what you're discussing, I have hated the we don't do media bullshit for fucking ever. The snobs that wrote books and pieces in Harper's that got results from their efforts had their success because 8 years earlier, kids gave blood and careers in the streets. The academic Brie Eater went to the awards ceremony on Abby Hoffman's and Bobby Seale's back, and then the bastard wouldn't even tip them. And that's the truth. And you know what? It hasn't changed. It hasn't changed. I'll say this now. I hope I'm not pissing anybody off. But, you know, I know, you know, every night at the close of the program, I reference the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch. And they are. That's not some slogan. That's not made up. I know the lives they lead. I know the troubles they face. I know the straight upslope nature of their existence. And I know that in the face, and I know that they stand and look a billion-dollar industry square in the eye. And they don't blink. All the while sweating whether or not they're going to be able to make next month's rent, power, the water and sewer, garbage, and grocery bills, and buy gasoline. Because of the pittance that they make in the effort. While, on the other side, the huge national and international green groups raise millions of dollars on their asses. And that's not ingratitude. but it is damned well a fact. And what I, you know, what I'm trying to lay out here, David, is that this is an endemic problem that isn't just media, isn't just environmental, isn't just labor, isn't just women's rights or gay rights. Every problem that the left has is a problem that the entire left has. Every solution that the left may reach is a solution that the entirety of the left may reach, but only in that moment when the left realizes that it's all one struggle. Now, I know that may sound just a little bit too doctrinaire or a little bit too ideologically pure for some people, but it's the truth. You know, if you're living below a mountaintop removal job and you're breathing micronized, aerosolized silica dust and diesel fumes and poison every day, then it's that. And you happen to be a female of childbearing age. Guess what? It's not an environmental issue anymore. It is, by God, a feminist issue. Because you have gone, because corporate America has taken you to a place that is at the very heart of what it means to be a woman. At the very heart of what it means to be the half of the species that gives life, when that ability to give life has been profoundly compromised. When you live at the foot of that mountain and you breathe that garbage and you believe in workers' rights and their right to organize and be in a union, suddenly it's not an environmental or a labor issue anymore when your ability to even breathe or keep from growing cancerous garbage inside your body compromises your ability to go out and organize workers. It's all one issue. Sorry. Preachy. I know. I apologize, David. I did that on your dime. Me
no,
bad.
No. I understand. I want to give other people a chance to talk. So I just want to say I picked up another fundraiser for
eBay.
So we're going to plan and plot and strategize on how we can get more funding per week. And like I said, people, if you want to hit me up, it's at hornauction@gmail.com. And don't think it, you can't do it, because I personally know that you can do it, and you can do it however, whatever you have that's around you. I encourage people to get involved, and this keeps it away from having to worry about passing the hat around. And to me, that's a good thing. And one of the things I was thinking about, Bob, was wouldn't it be great if we had a separate fund. And also, we could write up proposals, and I know it's possible, Bob. I know it's possible because there's a lot of companies out there to try to attempt to get the horn off the grid and self-sustaining.
Oh, devoutly to be wished.
I know it's possible, Bob, and I know with the right proposal and the right people on board, if we were to brainstorm together in the horn community and put together a proposal, I think a lot of companies would jump just at the chance of being the premier, being the first, and being part of the pioneering side of media that we're on right now. So I wouldn't rule it out, people, because there's a lot of companies out there that would that are just dying to get exposure.
You know what? Every day with every new listener, we get a little bit closer to finding who that is. And that's
the truth. All I can say is keep up the fight, and people, if you want to reach me and you want to talk a little bit about this, on how to get started on eBay or any other kind of fundraising, hit me up at hornauction@gmail.com, and I will respond swiftly.
Wonderful. Thank you, David, and thank you for opening so many doors to conversation this evening.
All right, no problem, Bob.
Later. Take care. Bye now. And let's see. Let's keep things rolling along. No. 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 All of a sudden, all six lines lit up, but there's nobody there. Huh. Weird. Well, try back in. Anybody who wants to get in on the conversation, do so. I'm beginning to wonder if we've got some sort of little the demon inside the telephone system. Oh, that's just great. The one thing that we can't do without, the one thing that must not go down. But let's see if this actually turns into a phone call. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
It's Ange.
Oh, hey, Ange, how are you?
I'm good. God, I can't believe I just called and I got in.
Well, everything lit up and then everything went away, so.
Wow. Well, you know, I've been thinking, and I always love when David calls in. You know, when you talk about, you know, supporters that are supposed to be leftists and, you know, the famous people that won't have anything to do with your radio station. Has anybody ever tried Mike Judge? It's like everybody on the horn loves Idiocracy, worship, you know, not worship, but, you know, understand.
Okay, only I worship, but, yeah, I understand.
But you know what I mean. It's like, have you ever tried him? Maybe he.
I have no idea how you'd even begin to get through the layers of flappers that stand between him and people like us.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I feel for, you know, what David says, and it's like.
Yeah, and I don't, I'm not.
I feel. I'm going to lose. I'm, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm losing hope of any, you know, sense out here in America. You know, I live in Arkansas, and it's, you know.
A lot like living in West Virginia, yes.
Yeah, even though I do live in a college town, which, you know, there's a lot of more logical people politically here. But then, you know, there's not. It's like these people have been trained for all their lives, and they, you know, record all their TiVo stuff all the time, and it's like they just lose consciousness of what's going on in the world. And the Americans have been programmed that way.
Well, I think there's a cogent argument that you're absolutely correct in your assessment.
You know, just like, you know, a lot of people call in and say, and it's like some of us, you know, I work hard, and just sometimes the daily grind of life and trying to work just to stay alive, you know, depresses you. And when you try to do something and you have no feedback or people look at you like you're crazy, you feel like, you know, what can you do to just live your life and try to be as happy as you
and,
can?
But you know what? Where you are, yeah. Ange, where you are in Arkansas, where I am in West Virginia, where the folks I know in Georgia and Alabama are, all of that is a function of the fact that the Southern liberals have been left by the wayside. Well, you know, y'all live there. It's too dang bad.
Yeah, and we're crazy.
And, you know, people write books called...
Logical.
Right, but people write books called Whistling Past Dixie that argue that the Democratic Party should just ignore the hell out of the South and pretend it doesn't exist and leave liberals in the South to the tender mercies of their conservative overlords. And I despise that crap, Ange.
I do, too. I really do. And it is not fair. You know,
I mean, do you know why Don Siegelman had to
America? Because I feel like, you know, we're in a whole different country, a whole different.
Well, you remember the map, the cute little map that came out in 2004 that showed the United States of America and then Jesus Land. Remember that? And all the old Confederate states and Oklahoma and so forth were Jesus Land.
Yeah, and they're hypocrites. They just believe everything their little, you know, Jesus people say, and they don't look for the truth, they don't look for the facts. And they're not really, they're like in a cult that's not even worshiping what they're worship, you know, what Jesus wrote, you know? They
yes.
Around,
Well, you know, look, a minute ago, Ange, I mentioned Don Siegelman. You know, the governor of Alabama who had hell persecuted out of him. Well, do you know why he had to be stopped? Why he had to be pursued at all costs by the Republican Party? Because he was a successful, honest-to-God liberal in the belly of the right-wing beast. And he was, you know, and he was making inroads. He could have been a national political figure had not the Bush administration moved in to stop him at all costs.
That gives me the chills up and down my spine. I just can't believe what this country is coming to. And if something don't get done really quick, it's only going to get worse. And I hate to be a pessimist, but it scares me. You know, because no one cares. They're in la-la land. You know? Foreclosing and get as much money as they can and on credit. And, you know, I was a victim of credit back when I was in my, you know, early 20s. And I realized, you know, what it was all about. It's like, you spend $300, if you don't pay it off, you're going to spend $1,000. And I haven't used credit since probably the 1996. I live, and I've always lived, like, if I don't have the money for it, I can't afford it, and I live simply. And I live, like, a mile from where I work. I don't even shop. I'm in Walmart land. Okay, I have like two super centers, like 2 miles away from me, and you know another like Walmart neighborhood store, not too far.
Yeah, you live in a place, Ange, where if Walmart don't carry it, you don't need it.
People make fun of me because I say, well, I might go to Walmart once a year, and you know they go to Walmart 2 or 3 times a week. I'll go to the local place and pay a little bit more. Just because, you know, it's a way closer, you know, instead of driving 3 miles, I drive a half a mile or something like that. But I feel that my money is going somewhere locally.
Yeah.
You know, and not in, and I live very simply, and I've been made fun of forever on it. But then, you know, I don't have a lot of this overhead and stress that a lot of these people do. You know, they get married, they think they need to buy a house because they have a kid, and they get over their head, and then they file bankruptcy or can't pay their, you know what I mean? Because if a house is, there's a lot more money involved in owning a house than people think. There's a personal property tax. There is the maintenance to the house. There, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do.
Unless you're a lot, you know, or Mr. Fix-It, or know someone that's Mr. Fix-It, and, you know, you have this money, and people drive, you know, 30 miles to get to work. But Arkansas is, you know, I'm a graphic artist. They say, oh, you're a graphic artist, you should make a lot of money. But I don't, because the wages here in Arkansas, unless you're a lawyer or some kind of high corporate person that work at Tyson's that, you know, don't do nothing, really. I mean, you don't make a lot of money here. And
you're not supposed to. That's why it's Arkansas.
I like it. Well, yeah, I know. But I like it here in Fayetteville in a way because I was born and raised in downtown Kansas City. You know, when I was a teenager in the 80s, you know, there was drive-throughs. You know, gangs, drive-by shootings. It was very scary there. My uncle was even killed by a gang member walking home from the bus from work. But I feel safer here, in a way. And I don't know, maybe that's why I'm still living here. But even though sometimes it ticks me off when I see the local commercials, because I do not have, I haven't paid for cable. I will never pay for cable. I just pay for my internet. And I have one of those digital boxes. And I get some of the local stations. And sometimes when I'm watching TV, you know, the commercials that come on, it's like against the health care reform. And there's these old people like, I don't want my health care taken away. And I don't want this voted, you know, against the health care reform. And, you know, all these clean coal advertisements that are on. And, you know, it's like, I think I told you this last time, but I'm not sure. Local news a couple months ago, they took a poll in Arkansas, and people would rather have Rush Limbaugh as president than Obama. All right, okay, how insane is that?
Lots.
It is crazy. I mean, and that's just to the point where it's like that. It's like this here, and I'm sure it's like this that everywhere, you know, in every state. In a way.
Well, you've got some in every state, but in places like Arkansas, Alabama, Mississippi, Georgia, West Virginia, you've got a lot more of them in higher concentration.
They're just brainwashed. And when you try to say something, deactivate the brainwash, just like you said a while ago, like put a little bit of stream of consciousness into them, you know, it does not work.
But yeah, not so good, no.
They cannot go into the stream of consciousness because their consciousness, look, I can't even pronounce it, is so warped that they have no idea what consciousness really is. And it's frustrating. And, you know, what can a person do? Just like you said, it's like most of us liberal people, we aren't, you know, mean, and I've always been the kind of person that, just like I told you before, I'm not a well speaker. I have problems when I talk out loud. I always have. I even went to.
Well, you're doing fine so far.
But I'm more of a visual and kind of a thought person, but it's just crazy because I want to do more here where I live. And I, you know, I've tried, you know, I remember when I made those flyers a year or so ago and passed them out, it's like, I don't feel like any of that helped. Even though I try to tell people, they look at me like I'm crazy or something, but I don't know, maybe I need some kind of script to come off. You know, I know that sounds kind of retarded, but yeah, because I was in the theater way back, but I always had a script to go by. So, and I'm not the best writer, but
yeah, it's that ad lib thing that'll bite you.
Yeah, but you know, my imagination runs wild most of the time, and I've been thinking about this forever. And it's like, wouldn't it be cool if we had like a big town. Was just like all of us that thought the same and with all these different talents and stuff got together and only lived in this town and we could like rule the world from one town or something, you know, all the liberals and get all the money together of all the liberals and just go for it. All the talents of all the people and all the money.
Well, there are states in the union where that happens. You've just never seen it because you're not there.
I guess not. But it's just crazy.
You know, and that's you know, that's kind of something that we've been talking about tonight, Ange, is that you can't just abandon the South and say that, you know, there will be little liberal ghettos in the South and they'll just and the liberals in the South will just have to get on as best they can. Because, you know, we're gonna let redneck state, red state, the right wing, conservative, Republican state governments below the Mason-Dixie line, and we're just gonna let them opt out of the public of the public option, and you know, the hell with everybody down there.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of people, especially older people, you know, that are in this mindset that they're never gonna change. They'll have the hate in them forever. will have, you know, even people that you do not even think of. It's just crazy. You know, people that you think are intelligent and have some kind of wit, you know, you'd think they would be intelligent enough to see the truth.
And there they go, proving themselves all insane again.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, people that are highly respected, that are intelligent, they can, you know, see all facts, but then when it comes to the certain facts, they're all twisted and warped, you know? I don't know. It boggles my mind. And, you know, sometimes, I know I haven't been around lately, and mainly it's because I had an experience when I went to Colorado in July where I almost drowned in a white river rafting thing.
Ooh.
I even had a gigantic mark to prove it when, well, my first attempt when I high-sided on the roughest part of the Upper Taylor near Crested Butte, you know, it's like I was wanting, thank God for the life jacket, because I would have been dead. And I'm an excellent swimmer also. And I've been on canoeing, you know, rides here in Arkansas for a long time. And my first attempt of rescue, they threw out this little skinny rope, you know, maybe like a quarter of an inch, 3/8 of an inch thick or something like that. You know, and I wrap it around myself, and the current is so pulling me, and they're pulling me. And I feel like the rope is going to cut me in half at one point, and I had to let go, and then I go down the river again, and the current kept pulling me down. I did everything I was supposed to do. But, you know, I had this thing where I'm like, oh, my God, is this the way I'm going to die? And I ended up getting, you know, I ended up finding a raft, and they eventually pulled me up and stuff. But I had this, my stomach all swelled up, and then I had this jolly, oh, gosh. It was like about an inch and a half thick, gigantic bruise from one side all the way around the front to the other side. So my mom is like...
But it was a bruise. Yeah, but at that point, it becomes a bruise worth having.
It just happened afterwards, but I wasn't even thinking about my, you know, my internal organs maybe being damaged. I was just happy to be alive. And it kind of opened my eyes in a way, you know, thinking I can't be depressed all the time. You know, because I'm a worrywart, and you know I care about things like everybody here in the Horn cares about. But you know, when you see your life flash in front of your eyes, sometimes you just want to maybe have fun a little bit.
Oh sure, absolutely.
And you know, I've spent all my life worrying and stressing about stuff, and I just need to have fun. Well, that, you know, that's kind of one of my little experiences that happened to me. But, yeah, after when I saw, you know, the bruise and stuff, well, it was a red mark at first, but then I had, like, this gigantic bruise for, like, a week and a half or more, you know. And the first thing, and I met my sister there that lives in Seattle, and she's like, when she sees me going down, she's like, oh, my God, if Angela dies, Mom's going to kill me.
The sibling thought process, it never fully goes away.
My sister was thinking that when I was like, and I went down for a long time. I was getting ready to pass out because the water was like 30, it felt like it was like, well, it was like maybe 40 degrees, but it felt like it was 20 degrees. It really did. It was cold. But that's one of my little stories that I had for something that happened to me. But it's a weird experience. And when you see it happen on TV, when someone's, you know, going down this rapid river, you don't think it is as bad as it is. But unless you experience it...
It's bad. Now, see, we've got... Whitewater rafting is the big thing around here where I live, okay? It's the heart and soul of our tourism industry. I won't go whitewater rafting. I just won't. I don't ride roller coasters, and I won't go whitewater rafting because I'm a big old chicken.
Oh, I love roller coasters.
See? Well, I always figure if I want to go fast and be afraid I'm about to die, there's lots of coal trucks on the highway, and I got an automobile.
The worst thing about it is, I was like, I didn't want to go. It was the day after the 4th of July. Sunday, it was on a Sunday. And I was telling my sister and her husband and my niece and the other two people that were coming with us. It's like, I don't want to go. I don't want to go. I'm not going. I'm staying here and going down to the horse ranch, you know, with Clark. And they're like, no, you're going. You're going. And then after that happened, I'm like, see, I had a premonition. And I didn't want to go, but you guys made me go. And they didn't make me go. I could have just said no.
Nah, they peer pressured you.
It was weird.
They peer pressured you.
But actually, the raft, when I saw the raft when I first went, it didn't look like a raft. It looked more like a... And my friend Andy from England described this very eloquently. That doesn't look like a raft. That looks like a dinghy. Because I have the pictures, like, posted on my Facebook page and my MySpace page. Because there was, like, this photographer that would go on the edge of the river at certain points and take pictures of
you. Oh, sure, yeah, that, yeah, and they'll shoot movies of you, and they're available for sale back at the gift shop, and, yeah.
Yeah, and it was, like, the pictures were, like, half of them I were in, and then the other half I wasn't in.
No, that's back when they were, that's about when they were calling you Bob, because that's what you were doing in the river, you bobbing.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, I was just happy I didn't slam into a rock or anything. But I was keeping my feet in front of me, you know, so if I did slam into something, my legs would hurt. You know, I was following all the stuff that they told us to do if it happened. But, yeah, it was scary. And I don't know. Drowning is... I guess I would rather drown than burn to death, but...
What a hell of a choice.
Yeah, I know. But if I had to choose, I guess. But, yeah, that was scary. And I've always been a water person. I love the water. But, yeah, that's kind of strange. But I don't want to take up and eat up all the rest of your time. I want someone else to call.
Okay, well, good hearing from you, Ange, and, I mean, under the circumstances, really good hearing from you.
So, okay, remember the challenge that happened last week?
Yes, and you responded very kindly to it.
Even though I gave us a couple weeks before, I had to do it. So, how many people ended up going to, like, what is it, Sunday or Monday? Because it was two people. There was that one guy, and then there was that lady. I can't remember their name.
Maura and Michael and Texas Betsy.
Okay. So did it go good?
We're not done yet, but it's going quite well. The part of it that Michael and Texas Betsy put together is done. And the part of it that Maura initiated has until Friday to get done.
Yeah, I just had to go because I only had, like, you know, $15 left in my PayPal account. So I'm like, I can't do much with this other than just donate more. And it seems like every time I have money, I just donate to you guys in there. And I feel like that's the best thing because sometimes I basically use it for eBay.
Well, you know,
I don't buy anything on eBay anymore. So.
Yeah, it's like we said Friday night. If you're going to do something stupid with your money, do something stupid with us.
That's how I feel. Okay, rather than go to a bar and meet shallow people that just want to use you for something, you might as well just buy your six-pack of beer, come home, listen to the head-on radio network, and spend that extra $15 on you guys. And go in the chat room and chat with all the beautiful people that are in the chat room that are always nice. You know, and they're beautiful people. I love you all. Head on Radio Network is the best thing that's happened to me since I've been living in Arkansas. And I just found you guys when I was goofing around with different trying to find different spoken word radio stations on my iTunes at work. Because, you know, I'm sitting in front of my computer all day, and when I started listening, I listened to Air America. But then after I found you guys, I think you guys are way better than Air America.
Bless your heart. We try.
And you, Bob, I love Guy James. I love Guy James, and I love Mark Levine and John Fox, even though I don't get to call in ever because it seems like I'm never home on Sundays. But you are so entertaining, and you're like, you know, the thespian-like person that does all the drama and acting and funny stuff. I just think
that I'm just working it all out of my system here. I'm a frustrated thespian. That's exactly what it is.
The world needs to know that.
You've blown my cover, Ange.
I do, because I just love you. And, you know, but I love everybody at the Horn. I do. They're awesome. But, all right, well, I'm going to let you go so another person can call. And you have the lines going now?
Yeah, we're cooking. I'll try the next line if it hasn't reverted to a busy signal.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you later.
Ange, good talking to you, dear, and so glad you made it out of the river alive.
Yeah. All right, bye.
All right, bye. Yeah, no kidding. I will not go whitewater rafting around here, and I've taken no small amount of grief for it. But by the same token, they sell T-shirts in the little gift shops here. You know, when the folks from out of state come to go down the Whitewater in West Virginia. And the T-shirt says, "Paddle faster, I hear banjo music." The first time I saw that, I confess, I giggled. And then I got to thinking about it, and I was thinking, wait a minute. I'm the people they're laughing at. My son and my daughters are the people that they're laughing at, I hear banjo music. Because, you know, that's a reference to Deliverance, right? Yeah, and what happened to Ned Beatty and all of that.
Squeal like a pig!
Yeah. Not pretty. Paddle faster. I hear banjo music. Because, you know, that's what we are around here. It's funny that there's a reference to Deliverance in West Virginia whitewater rafting when that whole damn thing took place in Georgia! That's where the buggy ears and the banjos and the inbreds and Uncle Daddy happened. Not here. Not here. Paddle faster. I hear banjo music. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Brooklyn. Yeah, the Bush family strikes again. That's all I need to say.
In which regard?
Look at the two states that can turn this whole thing around and get our 60 votes for the public, Maine.
Ah, you mean Connecticut?
And Maine. The Bush family owned Joe Lieberman. George W. did not kiss him on the forehead for nothing.
Well, shucks, I thought he puckered up and kissed him right on the mouth.
Well, that's it. I don't know.
No, I'm sorry. That was the King of Saudi Arabia he kissed square on the mouth. Usually you got to go to some little, you know, peep show to see that kind of thing. But
oh yeah,
not when a Bush is president. Oh hell no.
I'll kiss someone on the mouth if I got the money that the Bushes were getting from the Saudi royal family.
Now let's not completely call your ethics into question, Kevin. Because then somebody's going to, well, Bob, what would you do? What would you do for lottery money? And I don't want to think about it. Might involve somebody looking at me and saying, "Squeal like a pig." No, I'll stay poor.
But one thing I'll never kiss Joe Lieberman in the mouth for anything. Just of me living in the state bordering his state makes me need to shower.
That's, yeah, exactly. That's what I was talking about earlier this evening, talking about being in D.C. I feel like I need to wear one of those flu masks just to make sure that no molecules that Joe Lieberman have breathed have any sort of ingress into me.
Okay, the next thing you know, I might be behind the microphone on Thursday talking like this. And then I'd know it was all over.
Man, it's like Joe Weaver. And, you know, it's like he is so bought and paid for. And...
Oh, yeah, bought, signed, sealed, delivered, yeah, the works.
Yeah. And, you know, again, it goes back to that Calvinistic notion of it. And, you know, Joe Weaver to me is the poster boy for self-hating Jewish people, which there are, because of those Republicans.
You can make that argument that if that demographic exists, if that psychographic exists, that he's the guy. You know, how must it feel to get up every morning and look at yourself and say, well, I've got to go and sell my soul some more. I'm going to take some more money from the insurance industry. Hadassah, are you going to go take more insurance from the insurance industry? Yes, dear. Don't we hate ourselves? Yes, dear, but we're rich. So, you know, cold comfort, I guess.
You know, it's like, okay, you know, he goes to these, you know, fundamentalist churches as guest speakers, and they want to slit his throat.
Oh, they would if they got a chance. Well, not until Jesus... No, wait, Kevin. Not till Jesus comes back and tells them to. They're very patient like that. But no, you're right. It's all a sham. It's all fraud. You know, the whole reason that, you know, come on, nobody thinks that he thinks anything about an economic recovery. That's BS from the, you know, from the word go. Please, for the love of God.
But if you really want an economic recovery, bring out health care, make it a government, you can hire at least 50,000 people, you know, right off the bat to administer that.
Yeah.
At $50,000 a year. And pay a couple of executives.
And that ain't bad living. I mean, granted, $400,000 a year, you're not eating lobster every meal, just once a day. But you can get by.
Yeah. It, you know, so it's like, to me, it's just amazing the greed in this country. The greed, the unlimited greed of the country. That's what's going to get the downfall. Well, we're not going to bump the country down. It's just, you know, we're so overdosed by it. You need the media to realize it.
Probably right. You know, it's a matter of not paying attention. You know, what's the old bumper sticker? If you're not furious, you're not paying attention. Yeah, that. Seems it makes sense to me.
And it's just, again, it's a matter of, you know, people need to start, you know, like remember the movie Wall Street where it says, you know, don't get too emotional about the stock.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't get. Don't let your emotions cloud your judgment.
Don't get too emotional about nations now.
But I tell you what, I will get emotional about my fellow Americans.
Oh yeah, well, you know.
Because I simply cannot tolerate the idea that these blithering, dithering fools like Joe Lieberman are willing to stand in the way. You know, in other words, he's saying that this economic recovery that he has suddenly noticed is worth more than the lives of 45,000 Americans per year. And that is a an equivalence that I cannot buy into. Because that's 45,000 people with 45,000 mothers, 45,000 fathers, 45,000 brothers or sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, daughters, sons. And the ripple of misery just extends from where Joe Lieberman drops them in the great pool of profit. And I can't stand for that. I can't stand it. It sickens me. And Kevin, is that me, or is that, or is that the normal response? Is that the response that should be happening all over this country?
Of what?
Of being unable to tolerate the idea that Joe Lieberman is willing to have 45,000 people killed in the name of economic recovery.
Oh yeah.
Because, that's what it is. I haven't seen anywhere else, Kevin, where people have made that connection. That Joe Lieberman is willing to have 45,000 Americans per year killed so long as he can have something that he calls economic recovery.
It's a lot of fun. Look how many millions of people are living in misery under the bushes who are dead. You know? How much blood is on their hands?
Buckets, gallons, railroad car tankers full.
Yes, oil tanker full of blood. And living in misery.
All we got in common is our misery. The least we can do is share it.
You know,
it's a hell of a motto, isn't it?
Yeah. And this is why I say I don't believe for 1 minute the Gilligan's Island routine George W. put on for the past 8 years. That is.
Oh, he took that on the road. Did you catch that? They've let him out of his hidey hole. I guess it's kind of like how they take old Broadway shows on the road to Buffalo and try it out somewhere else before it came to Broadway. And, you know, there it is. George Bush was let out to go and speak, and there he was yammering away in, what, Fort Worth, Texas today? Yeah, he spoke to nearly 15,000 people at the Get Motivated seminar in Fort Worth. The report says that he focused on lighter topics like picking out a rug design for the Oval Office that reflected his optimism. You want to guess how much he made on this?
A couple hundred thousand.
He made, for the speech he gave, Kevin, he made $3,571 per minute.
How long was the speech?
28 minutes.
Wow.
100 large.
But my thing is, I never believed George W. was an idiot from day one. He purposely plays the fool because, you know, there's certain parts of this country who don't like intelligent people. And you know, the dumber politicians are, the more like us. That nonsense.
Well, I tell you what, we got a hell of a fight in front of us, don't we, Kevin? Seems to me, at least. And if we don't take it seriously, and if we don't understand that, you know, what you said is true, you know, he played the fool. But at his core, he is a Bush, and he's a mean-spirited, pig-eyed, jug-eared little warmonger with, again, buckets of blood on his hands. If we don't understand that that's the people that are opposing us and that we oppose, we're going to get our asses handed to us. Is that about fair, you think?
Yeah. I'm telling you, these people are just greedy and mean. And
yeah, greedy and mean. They often go together, don't they? And they've found their perfect nexus in George W. Bush. Kevin, I got a roll, but good talking to you, brother.
Okay.
I'll catch you soon. All right, bye. From Brooklyn, that's Kevin. And it's time to wrap things up, I guess. About 7 minutes and change before the hour. Everybody get ready to run on over to Malloy. Unless you're listening to the rerun stream after Malloy, in which case, well, I don't know what comes next. But wherever you've been and whatever you've been doing, I thank you for sharing your time with us this evening. It is time that is joyously shared on this end, I can tell you that much. As soon as I close down the shop here, well, I know that Agnes has been feverishly packing my bag, for heading for D.C. tomorrow. I'm looking forward very much to sharing that all with you. And I might get to meet some new folks because, among other things, I think the stream link is going to be on the webpage there at Campaign for America's Future. Building the New Economy. I can't wait. To hear what we hear and see what we see. And we will do everything in our power to make it as real and immediate for you as we possibly can. I think it's a great use of the horn's abilities, talents, time, and resources. And I hope you do as well. Of course, you know, the double bonus, extra super good cherry on top of the ice cream sundae treat for me is getting to work with Guy James. Because it is impossible not to have a great time behind the microphone and a great time in D.C. When you've got Guy James alongside. So I'll get out of here as early as I possibly can in the morning, drive to D.C., hopefully hook up with Guy about 3 o'clock, then there's a reception tomorrow evening. Trying to figure out if there's some way I can fire up a microphone and do a little broadcasting then, but that's probably a little too much after a long day on the road. Might be interesting, though. Might be interesting. At any rate, again, thank you for this evening. Thank you for being here last night as well. Thank you for a couple of highly enjoyable programs on my end. You know, I wouldn't do this if I didn't enjoy it. I've done enough things in my life that, you know, going out the door every morning, I went with my heels dragging and my head hung. Oh, goody. I get to go hustle AOL to people without computers again. Oh, joy. Hold me back. Yeah, I've done that. This I love. And I hope you know that. Thank you for everything you've done toward keeping us afloat in the past month. And just another reminder that Maura's challenge is still out there. You need about $130 to make up the $250 that she has already pledged. And that will actually close out October, meeting our monthly goal for the first time in a long time. And that's refreshing. And it also means there will be November. Which, at the tender age of 4 years old for the horn, I think is a really, really neat thing, having a November when you've just turned four. So that's where it all stands. If you care to use the PayPal button, if you do things that way, the button's right there at headonradionetwork.com. There's a tab called Contribute, where you can also find the snail mail address. 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, P as in Paul, M as in Mary, B as in Bravo, 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, West Virginia, WV, 25801. Had a bunch of other stuff to get into this evening. We ran short. One of these days, this is just going to have to turn into a six-hour program, and that's all there is. It's no way around it. And you know what? That'd be fine by me. So the next time you hear from me and or Guy, we'll be in Washington, D.C. I hope you'll be right where you are, and I hope you'll be with us. Getting that stream won't be any different than tuning into the program on any other given day. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this possible. Thanks to Peter Godbold, who continues to recover, we're happy to announce. Thanks to John Fox. Thanks to Ben Birch. Thanks to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. The Coal River Wind Project is under threat, and if you haven't called the White House yet, if you haven't done everything you can to try to save Coal River Mountain for real economic prosperity in southern West Virginia, I implore you to do so. It's worth it. For people who are your fellow Americans, it's worth it. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well now, good afternoon and welcome everybody to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. I'm okay. I hope you're okay. I hope you're having a good day. I am so far. Had a big old birthday over the weekend, and, well, another year older, another day older and deeper in debt, as Tennessee Ernie Ford used to say. Remember that song? Some people say, you know, well, I used to do an impersonation of Tennessee Ernie Ford. He was a heck of a guy and a pretty good singer, a good old baritone bass singer, and I enjoyed Tennessee Ernie. We've got a lot to talk about today for the next couple of hours anyway, and we hope you'll stay with us for the whole 2 hours. Of course, Wednesday, I do want you to know tomorrow is a travel day, and you'll probably be hearing a best of show. Bob and I will be on our way to our nation's capital, to good old Washington, D.C., for a conference taking place there. It's called Making It in America, Building the New Economy. And it's put on by the Institute for America's Future, the same organization, same group that does the Take Back America Conference. And we always enjoy going to those. Mr. Robert Borisov is in charge of that organization. We'll be seeing him. And among other luminaries that will be there, Senator Sherrod Brown, Senator Jim Webb, Representative James Clyburn, they'll all make it unless some sort of a emergency takes place up the street at the Capitol Building. This is on New Jersey Avenue, a beautiful place right up the street from where we did the inaugural broadcast. Can't remember, the Liaison Hotel is where we did the broadcast from. It's right across the street from the Hyatt Regency. And the Washington Court Hotel, where we'll be doing this, is a block further north up the street. And the wonderful thing about New Jersey Avenue is that you can walk out of your hotel or a restaurant or any place else you happen to be on that beautiful street and look south, and there's the Capitol Building just right in the middle of the street as you look down to it, sticking up, displayed beautifully. And it's just always a wonderful sight to look down there, and especially at night. Have you been to Washington at night and seen the dome lit and the White House lit and the Washington Monument and the Lincoln Monument on dark nights when it's lit all night long is a spectacular sight, as is the Iwo Jima Monument. Washington is gorgeous at night. I recommend sometime, if you can, going up at night in the Washington Monument. You'll clear up the top, clear up in the peak there, and then looking out upon this spectacular city. One of the most interesting cities in the world, and looking at it at night, or with all the monuments lit, the Jefferson Memorial. As you drive by or walk by the Jefferson Memorial, you can see Thomas Jefferson standing in there ever so stately, and with many of his famous quotes described upon the walls in there. And there is no more spectacular sight. Let me tell you something that a lot of people I don't think realize. We see the bigger and bolder monuments around Washington, D.C., but at night, to go by the wall, the Vietnam Wall, and then very nearby, after you head kind of west toward the Vietnam Wall, and you get through there, you come upon the Korean War Memorial. And it is lit at night, and I don't know of anything that grabs me more in Washington. It gets my attention. It sends chills down my spine than the Korean War Monument, because it's a collection of soldiers bigger than life size, standing there in their war gear, frozen in time, with the looks on their faces. And I can't tell you who did those statues at this time. I should look that up. But it is an eerie, I guess it just shows the face of war on the soldiers' faces more than any other place. Of course, the Second World War monument, being the newest of the majors, is spectacular in and of itself. It's on the Mall as you look between the Capitol building and on toward down the Lincoln and up. You know, Lynn Font, when he designed Washington, D.C., what a brilliant man he was. I have often wondered if his plans for the city, if he ever had any idea of just how spectacular it would be. For example, I have one of the best places in Washington to look out upon the city is if you happen to be in the Speaker of the House's offices in the Capitol building. And I've been fortunate enough to be there during the day and look out the window west down the reflecting pool and then the Washington Monument and the World War II Monument and the pond in front of the Lincoln Monument and on up the hill at Arlington Cemetery, where now three Kennedy brothers are buried, and the Lee Mansion sitting on top of that hill. The sight down through there is breathtaking. And I would also add the sight from the Lee Mansion in Arlington looking the other direction is spectacular. I must say, for the Kennedys, you couldn't pick a better place to be buried, if that is your want, than right there. That's a spectacular sight. And anybody ever going to Washington, do take the time, and it's a little bit of extra time if you're downtown and all, but do take the time to go and take a good look around Arlington National Cemetery. If you want to get a feeling of history, if you want to get a sense of what this nation is really all about, the sacrifice that's been given so that this country could survive and prosper, you need to go there. You need to go and stand beside the grave of Audie Murphy and a great war hero, movie actor afterwards. That's for some of you folks that don't know. But do see Arlington. And we'll be staying pretty close to where, just up the street from where they planned the assassination of Abraham Lincoln, and then where it was carried out at the theater, Ford Theater. And then Abraham Lincoln died across the street in a rooming house, and you can still go there and see the bed that he died in. And, of course, underneath of the Ford Theater now is a museum. Has his coat and his hat and all that that he was wearing that fateful night that John Wilkes Booth shot him and jumped from the balcony down on stage and broke his leg, and then later on we had to be attended to by Dr. Mudd. An interesting story. It just reeks of history when you go there. I would also always recommend a trip to the National Art Gallery. It's a spectacular sight, and the National Archives, and the Mint, the Department of the Treasury, the White House tour. All of these things are wonderful. And another very interesting spot, if you go to Washington, is Embassy Row. You get down to Embassy Row and see all the embassies of all the countries that we have relationships with around the world. It's quite a sight itself. So enough of the travelogue. Washington, D.C. is, in fact, without any doubt, one of the most interesting scenic cities in the entire world. And it's a good place to take your kids and take them when they're young. Take them when they're old enough to understand the American flag. maybe, what, the second, third, fourth grade, right in there. And they'll understand. They'll understand when they see Abraham Lincoln. They'll understand when they see the Washington Monument and Thomas Jefferson Monument. They'll understand what that's about. But it gives them, and I was fortunate enough to go there when I was very young, and have been there dozens and dozens of times since. And I never tire of it. And you probably get tired of hearing me say I never tire of it, but I don't. And the thing is, the last few years has given me an even better understanding of Washington than I ever had before, because before, all I ever had of it was the historical context and what this nation stands for. And now, sadly, over the past few years, I've gotten to understand even more of what the city stands for, and some of it's not so good, as you know. You've heard me profess on this show about the dirty, seedy side of Washington, D.C., and I'm not talking about the some of the ghettos in Washington, D.C. and all that, and it surely does have that. But the sleazy side of politics. You look at that beautiful Capitol building, and you are in amazement of what a spectacular sight it is, the granite and the marble and the gleaming white that you see at night when it's all lit up. You see the flag flying proudly above it. And that's what you want to leave there with, is that feeling in your heart. But then when you get a greater understanding of what happens in Washington and some of the dirty dealing and rotten things that have happened underneath that dome in the name of politics, you come away with mixed feelings about it. Still proud of it, still love it, but it's good to understand that there are two sides to it. There's the one side of the beautiful historic context that I talk about in the history of each and every buildings. And I've often said if I could have one job in Washington, D.C., if they let me be anything in Washington, D.C., I would want to be the curator of the nation's Capitol building. Oh, my. To know every nook and cranny in that building and to know the history of everything that went on in that building. And, yes, slaves did help build that building. It would be a wonderful thing. I love history, and I would certainly love to have that job. And of course, down at the Smithsonian wouldn't be so bad either. But I digress. I was talking about the sleazy side of politics, and I don't think it's ever become more clear. And it's becoming more and more clear all the time on what a sleazy side of politics we actually have in Washington. Right now is a perfect example of it. We have one party in power, the Democrats, who are trying to get a health care plan through. I like to think that they're getting the health plan through, and I'm virtually certain that they are trying to get the health plan through to actually help the people of the United States of America. There are no lobbying groups that will greatly benefit by us putting in a decent health care system. Certainly not. On the other side of the aisle, Republicans have, and some Democrats, let me include some Democrats, including Max Baucus in this, have had much to gain from lobbyists and big fat corporations who are profiting tremendously off the deaths of many American people in this country who are dying, an estimated 45,000 dying each and every year because of the lack of health care or no health care. So there's the sleazy side of it. We've seen the sleazy side of it during Watergate. We've seen the sleazy side of it during the Clinton impeachment. We've seen there's a lot of sleazy to talk about in Washington, D.C. Hopefully, the good outweighs the bad. I certainly hope so. If it doesn't, then there's many bad times ahead for this country. Many bad times. Our phones are down today. I do not know why, so it'll be me all day today. You can send an email to Guy James at the Guy James Show, and we'll do the best we can to get to to them during the show. And right now, I think we'll take a quick break and be back in just a moment or two.
I don't want to be a soldier. I don't want to kill and maim another mother's son or daughter. Imperial war is a dirty game. I don't want to be a soldier. Steal some other people's wealth. Invade their homes and their nation. This is how I've always felt. I call upon the world's millions. No more war in our name. Stop this madness. Stop the killing. Stop the suffering and the pain. I don't want to be a soldier, murder children in foreign lands, bomb and terrorize all those families. So for peace, I'll take my stand.
finding a Prince Charming of her own. But now I cry alone. Sifting through the wreckage that is washed upon the shore. My lover will be coming home no more. My lover.
Oh, I play that because sometimes I think people forget that there's war on. And just yesterday, we had, 14 Americans die as a result of helicopter accidents in Afghanistan. What a shame. What a shame the soldiers are dying for absolutely nothing there. As the argument rages on as to whether or not we should be in that godforsaken place. And, of course, I believe that those of us who believe in maintaining peace and staying away from wars that do not benefit this country, staying away from all wars, those of us that believe that way, those of us that worry terribly about thousands of our youngsters being killed, we will be overrun by the right-wing media, and we will end up being in that stinking war in Afghanistan for a long, long time. That's my feeling. I would pray and hope that our president would come out and say, no, I have, after much reflection, decided not to send 40,000 more troops over there, but I have the feeling that he's going to. And if he does, I will be sorely disappointed, as will many, or if not all of you, listening to this program. I know that most of you listening to this program are not bent upon going to foreign wars when they're not necessary. We have told of our objection to this over and over again, but we have not spoken out loudly enough. And the fact is, unless we start gathering in masses like we did during Vietnam, we will not get that message out because, as God knows and everyone knows, we're getting beat to death in the media every single day. And it may be something that you tire of hearing me talk about on this program, and you hear Bob talk about it. It is something that when Bob and I get together and talk about, it's about all we talk about. Because the media, he who owns the media, I forget which dictator said it, owns it all. And it's not that we want power to reign over, lord over everybody in the country. No, it's that we want an even media where we can hash these things out responsibly, where we know that both sides are being presented equally across the country, instead of one side dominating the press and the media like they do right now. And, Lee Atwater said it. He's the one that brought up this thing about the liberal media, and he recanted before he died. He didn't recant much, but he recanted that before he died. The myth of the liberal media, it does not exist. There's so little liberal media. And you hear the people that don't know any better go around, oh, yes, there's MSNBC, and there's the New York Times, and there's the Washington Post. Please. Please. If I sound a little, muffled today, kind of suffering from a little bit of a cold, I think. I hope that's all it is. Anyway, getting back to this media problem, as something I wanted to talk about at length today, if you'll allow me. I'm tired of it. Bob's tired of it. Most of you are tired of it. I think the media is heavily biased in favor of the conservatives because they've got so many more hours. It's like going to a grocery store and buying potato chips. I don't know where you live. There are many local brands of potato chips. But the big companies get the shelf space, and they sell the most potato chips. It's that simple, because they have the shelf space. We don't have the shelf space. We've got the good chips over on our side, but we don't get the shelf space to sell them. You know, there are many good liberal broadcasters out there right now. But if you can't get them on the air, if there's no shelf space for them, if there are no studios for them to do their shows in, tough. And that's what I wanted to talk about with you today. I saw an interview last week with Frank Schaefer, who I think is, I couldn't have any more contempt for the likes of Frank Schaefer than I do. I think you all realize that there are many absurdities floating around in the political arena these days, but I believe that this Center for Security Policy Award banquet held last week achieved a new low, or maybe a new high, depending on how you look at it. And honestly, had I received an invitation to a banquet which stated that Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby were receiving awards for meritorious service to the country, I would have assumed it was some sort of a joke, especially after finding out that Cheney's award was called the Keeper of the Flame Award, given to those, as it states, given to those individuals who have enhanced American security through their commitment to a strong military, the propagation of democracy and respect for individual rights throughout the world. End quote. An award like that, with that name given to Dick Cheney. The Libby Award was the Service Before Self Award given in the presence of Frank Schaefer, Donald Rumsfeld, and Douglas Feith. And it's almost a dream. It sounds like some sort of a hilarious film that Michael Moore might have made as a parody, but it actually happened, as you know. I held off saying much about it last week because I wanted to get all the information I possibly could about it. I wanted to do some in-depth investigation of my own research on some of these groups. And it started off with this Center for Security Policy that Frank Schaefer is a head of. He's one of the founders of it. And so I looked at the advisory board. And it wouldn't surprise any of you to learn that Kay Bailey Hutchinson, senator from Texas, neocon senator from Texas, got run for governor now. Senator Jim Inhofe, the bizarre, absolutely bizarre neocon senator from Oklahoma, who would be an embarrassment probably to any other state, but not to Oklahoma. Texas too. You've got Bill Slotz Bennett, neocon, former Secretary of Education, who doesn't believe in public education. He's on their advisory board. Former Secretary, Undersecretary, got Douglas Feith, the radical neocon, the absolute complete nutcase. You got Alan Keyes, ladies and gentlemen. Alan Keyes, probably the craziest rabid dog neocon of them all. And you've got Richard Perle, who is absolutely insane, a warmonger of the highest order. You've got this lunatic John Shadegg congressman, another fellow radical conservatives who believe there is no war that we shouldn't be involved in. That's what this Center for Security's policy group is all about. This is a dangerous organization. And like many of these think tanks, their funding is highly secretive and highly questionable. It's fascinating when you start digging under the layers of filth in Washington. For example, do you have any idea how many political parasites in Washington serve on multiple boards of organizations like this one, grabbing a salary from each one? Do these people really serve any useful purpose? I wonder, do they also get stipends from the military-industrial complex under the table? Your Martin Marietta's, your Boeing's, those people. We recently found out that the Pentagon has used the American public as subjects for a massive, massive propaganda campaign to sell the Bush war in Iraq. And we fell for it. Oh, we fell for it. And you remember many of these generals. Some of their names escape me now, but they were all over the news. They were contributors to CNN News, to MSNBC, and to Fox. They were there nightly talking about the war, usually in very positive terms. And here we find out that they were sent by the Pentagon or clients of the Pentagon, most of them paid by the clients of the Pentagon, to propagandize the American people into falling for this war. I can't tell you how infuriated I am to even think about that. That all of us were subjects of propaganda. I mean, we've been subject to propaganda so much, but this one was vast and far-reaching to sell a war so that we could get more Americans killed, so that we could get more oil, so we could maintain an imperial presence in the Middle East. Are these people any different? These people on these boards are many of them, because of their past relationships with the Pentagon, any different? Aren't they a propaganda machine? I noticed that for the Center for Security Policy, they've got former Boeing executives on their board. Who's that whistling in the background? Anyway, I don't know. Strange things happen when you're working with electronics. How many of you know that Frank Gaffney was pushed out of the Reagan administration because they saw him as too radical for them? Why, oh, why do people like this prosper in Washington? Why would anybody hire them or put them on their boards of directors? Unless, of course, your organization is some sort of nefarious radical group with a different agenda. And who funds these groups? How can people be suckered into donating large amounts of money to a group that is giving awards to criminals? And I do mean criminals like Cheney and Libby. Libby having been convicted in a court of law for perjury, and Cheney, who would absolutely be convicted of numerous war crimes if he was ever indicted and brought to trial, if the Democrats had the spine, which they do not. But if they did find the spine and the guts somewhere to indict this bastard, but they won't. Here's a man that's gotten away with many crimes against America, and he will never be tried for a single one of them because no group of Democrats, save maybe a handful, has got the balls to do what needs to be done regarding Dick Cheney. I had hoped that John Conyers and others would be able to raise enough dust over this that they would get something done about it. But as you can see, they are not about to. There is no serious investigation of any kind going on. But let bygones be bygones. After all, we have to live together in this town. And we can't indict a former Vice President of the United States for war crimes. Well, let me tell you, there's other countries that would indict him for war crimes. You can bet on that. And knowing what I know, I'd love to sit on one of those juries where he indicted. But no, he will remain free to speak out against the president right now. Him and his spawn, the daughter, that whole family. I can't say the whole family. I don't know much about the other girl, except that Cheney's extremely ashamed of her. The wife, Lynn, can't stand her either, and this daughter, Elizabeth, she's a chip off the old block, which is not anything to be proud of in my mind. Her father being a war criminal and all, and she's standing right beside him and taking the same tack that he does. There are a whole lot of things the hard right does where I can understand their reasoning for doing them. I like to be able to understand both sides, and I look at some of the things the right does, and I think, okay, they're making political strategic moves to benefit their cause. That's all part of the political game. I understand that. I get it. But what I absolutely cannot understand, no matter how hard I try, is how in hell can anyone save his family? How can anyone admire Dick Cheney? I think his approval rating is somewhere around 20% or so, and it defies logic to think that one out of five people polled in this country would say, yes, I really like Dick Cheney and what he stands for. First of all, even if you agreed with his thinking, which is unimaginable on its face, how could you like the guy? He's an ogre. He's a mean-spirited son of a bitch. That snarl of his, that smirk he displays in such a condescending manner, his general demeanor. Only a mother could love a guy like this, and his daughter is every bit as mean as the old man. And like I said, Lynn, too, both of them are terrible bitches. Yes, I said that, and I do mean it. To hell with this political correctness and rhetoric right now. They're just, oh, you know, you can't talk like that about the Republicans. I can and I will if it's what I feel. How can it be that people actually voted for this guy? Does the 20% figure show that 20% of the American people are like him and therefore agree with him? Damn, that's a scary thought. And when you stop and think that there are literally dozens of hardcore right-wing think tanks in D.C., like this Frank Schaefer organization, it's frightening. I tried to get Schaefer on the show, but no dice. He goes on Chris Matthews' show often, but he won't appear on mine. Evidently he hasn't realized yesterday that Matthews has him on there to show him as a buffoon. And I certainly enjoyed Michael Reagan taking him to task the other night. In case you didn't catch it, at the end of the interview, Schaefer, somewhat shaken by some things that Michael Reagan had said to him, is it Michael Reagan? You know what I mean, the good one. Schaefer said your father would be ashamed of you, and Reagan says, you better watch your mouth, Frank. I wonder why he won't come on my show. Really love to have him on. He's an interesting character, there isn't any question about that. I think many of you know who I'm talking about when I talk about Frank Gaffney. Did I say Schaefer before? I think I did. I meant Frank Gaffney. Frank Gaffney is the founder and the president of the, and I apologize to Schaefer. Frank Gaffney is the founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., and they claim that they're a not-for-profit, nonpartisan educational corporation. They were established in 1988 under Gaffney's leadership. And they brag about themselves. They say they've been nationally and internationally recognized as a source for timely, informed, and penetrating analyses of foreign and defense policy matters. They're a group of warmongers. Let's tell it like it is. They are a group of warmongers. And, you know, Gaffney is a host of a radio program called Secure Freedom Radio, a nationally syndicated radio program heard weeknights throughout the country. And on Secure Freedom Radio, Gaffney addresses current and emerging threats to national security, sovereignty, and our way of life. And he's guests that he has them on all the time. The two guys he loves the most is Newt Gingrich and John Bolton. Isn't that a cast of characters? I don't think that I could have John Bolton on the show, certainly not in the same studio with me, because if I ever saw the guy, I think I'd have to start in on him, Bolton. I don't think there's a more disgusting creep in the United States than John Bolton. I'd have to think about that. There are a lot of disgusting creeps, but I can't think of any of them in the political arena anyway that disgust me any more than John Bolton. But, you know, back to talking about Gaffney, he's written several books, and, of course, they're all about war. He even had Admiral Wolseley, former CIA director, write an introduction to one of his books. And he's involved in the Washington Times. He writes a weekly column for the Washington Times. He writes for Town Hall. He writes for Jewish World Review, a radical group that all for Zionism and Israel conquering the entire Middle East is what they would have. WorldNet Daily. You know, the usual ones. He's a frequent guest on shows like Lars Larson and Monica Crowley and Janet Parshall and Michael Reagan and Jim Bohannon. And you see him on TV quite a bit as well, like I said. Over the years, his op-ed articles have appeared in publications as the Wall Street Journal and USA. He's been all around. And, of course, he's gotten lots of awards from groups. The Zionist Organization of America, he got their award. The Department of Defense Distinguished Public Service Award. The U.S. Business and Industry Council's Defender of the National Interest Award. These people go around giving each other awards kind of like actors and actors do. Let's have a... that's right, let's have a award show and give ourselves some awards. So I got to digging in, and I think I'll wait just a moment before I get into this right now. I think I'll wait a couple minutes. We're going to pause for a break right now, and we'll be right back.
Saturday night.
that song? I don't know. It's just something about the melody and the guitar in the background. As many of you know, I do a little singing, a little guitar playing myself, and I enjoy when I hear something unusual like that, and I do enjoy that. Anyway, glad you're doing okay today. I hope you are anyway. If you weren't, you probably wouldn't be listening to the program. We mentioned earlier today that we'll be heading out to Washington, D.C. tomorrow, so tomorrow will be a travel day. And then coming up on Thursday, we will be broadcasting the entire event of the Making It in America, Building the Economy Conference from Washington from 9:30 a.m. to 2:30, until about 3:30 in the afternoon. My colleague, Bob Kincaid, and I will be bringing you every word of that. So it's something I think you'll find interesting, particularly those of you who are looking for jobs or want to understand where we are in the job situation right now. It's not good, I can tell you that. Just spoke to somebody this morning that was out looking for a job, somebody that's over 50, and not enjoying the job hunt so much because they're being discriminated against like crazy. If you think there isn't rampant age discrimination out there in the job market, you are badly mistaken, because it is rampant. It really is. We were talking earlier on about some of these right-wing think tanks in Washington, D.C., and I did a little investigative work into some of their groups. Some of them you've heard of, some of them maybe you haven't. There are hundreds of them, and they have infested Washington, D.C., right-wing groups. And one that always floats almost to the top of the group, not the top one, but we've got them listed here. The Heritage Foundation and some of those. Take the American Enterprise Institute, for example. It's one of the oldest and one of the most influential of the pro-business right-wing think tanks. It promotes the advancement, they say, of free enterprise, capitalism, and has been extremely successful in placing its people in influential governmental positions, particularly they did in the Bush administration. AEI has been described as one of the country's main bastions of neoconservatism, and it certainly is. They're located in Washington, D.C., down on 17th Street Northwest, not far from the Capitol, where their people can go out and change the minds of Congress critters. It's a group that was established way back in 1943. And here's the point that I want to bring up about some of these people. Finances. If you think these people don't have a fantastic influence on Washington, D.C., this group right here has a $25 million budget. And this is just from the last budget we could find out about from clear back in 2003. So 6 years ago, they had a $25 million budget for propaganda. Imagine that. And their board of trustees reads like the who's who of major corporate America, the vice chair of ExxonMobil, lawyers groups. Let me see here, who else? Huge corporations, American Holding Corporation, another Exxon group, State Farm Insurance Company, the Dow Chemical Company, Cigna Corporation, the American Water Company, Pepperdine University, the Alliance Capital Management Corporation, Spirit Finance Corporation, the Board of Trustees, all right-wing neocons seeking to further their influence through money in American political life so that they can gain even more profit. And the big issues for the AEI, it is a think tank for conservatives, for neocons and conservative libertarians. Among their areas of interest, including America's culture war, nice of them to say it that way, America's culture war. What does that mean when you read through the lines? I know what it means when you read through the lines, America's culture war. Let's keep those goddamn Mexicans out of here. And maybe if we could, we'd get the blacks out of here too. So whatever we do, we want to keep white America pure. And we want to keep only white people good old white Anglo-Saxon Americans. That's all we want. In fact, that's all that matters to them. That's what it means when they talk about a culture war in this country. George Bush had over a dozen people from the American Enterprise Institute in his administration. And that was more than any other of those groups. Very dangerous organization, the American Enterprise Group. The American Conservative Union, you know, they've all got American something in front of their names. This one was founded by William Buckley in, 1964. It's one of the nation's oldest lobbying groups for the right. These are the ones that rate the Congress people each year. And it's also known for the annual political action convention called CPAC. You'll know that one for sure. The gathering of Washington insiders and right-wing pundits and grassroots activists from across the country and as many other corporate America bigwigs that they could stuff in the room. William F. Buckley helped found this group. Brent Bozell, Frank S. Meyer, John Ashbrook. The chairman right now, I believe, is David Keene. Like I said, it was established in 1964. They have a monster budget as well. Senator Jesse Helms was on their board of directors. Grover Norquist is still on their board of directors. Morton Blackwell, this wonderful CPAC group. They work hard defining themselves as the nation's oldest conservative lobbying organization. It's a multi-base umbrella organization that specializes in grassroots organizing, as well as organizing and supporting conservative leadership. A group of crazy neocons is what it is. Let's tell it like it is. And you got another group called the Alliance Defense Fund. This is a group of high-profile religious right leaders, such as Dr. James Kennedy and James Dobson. And it sees itself as a counter to the ACLU, and as a legal group, it assists and augments the efforts of the other right-wing groups to, quote, keep the door open for the spread of the gospel. And their issues include pushing marriage protection, exposing the homosexual agenda, and fighting the war on Christmas. Now, they're not based in Washington. They're based in Scottsdale, Arizona. And they've got a $15 million budget back in 2003. God only knows how high it is right now. And one of their major donors, all of you Amway people that happen to be listening, one of the major donors is Richard and Helen DeVos from the Richard and Helen DeVos Foundation. Hardcore right-wingers. The daughter DeVos is heavily involved in right-wing politics. And their issues is that they're a Christian legal firm established by more than 30 Christian ministries to help defend, come on, say it with me, family values, and work against the ACLU. And they define themselves by their ability to strategize and coordinate with lawyers all over the United States, lawyers who sign up for the Blackstone Legal Institute. In other words, this is an evangelical group against gays, against black, against anybody that's other than white Christian America. That's what they're all about. And I could go on and talk for hours about each and one of these groups. You get on through them, All Children Matter group, the Alliance Defense Fund, the American Center for Law and Justice, the American Civil Rights Institute, the American Family Association, the American Legislative Exchange Council, the American Life League, American Society for Tradition, Family, and Property, Americans for Tax Reform, the Arlington Group, back on and on and on, the Club for Growth, the Christian Legal Society, the Christian Coalition of America, the Center for the Study of Popular Culture, the Collegiate Network, Concerned Women for America, the Eagle Forum, a particularly good group, the Eagle Forum Collegians, Family Research Council, the Federalist Society for Law, and the Heritage Foundation, and on and on and on. The Institute for Justice. There is no end to listing these groups. They are everywhere, and they are prolific. Just tons of them. I have the Eagle Forum is a particularly interesting group. They've got a huge, huge membership as well, and lots of money. That's the group founded by Phyllis Schlafly, who is half crazy in my opinion. They have 80,000 members. She has a weekly syndicated column. They all do. She's on radio, heard daily on 460 radio stations. That's what I'm talking about. God damn it. Phyllis Schlafly can be on 460 radio stations across the country. She's certifiable, and she's on 460 radio stations across the country, and we've got nothing out there to fight against this crazy group of hers. I don't understand. Will you help me understand? I shouldn't get worked up over, should I? Focus on the Family, James Dobson, $137 million behind him. Oh. We'll talk more about it when we come back after the news at the top of the hour. I don't think we're going to have news today. I think we're just going to take a break. We are having a phone problem today here on this October 27th. So hang in there. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Oh, day the light of day on me. Seemed impossible to me. When someone else is scared of me, always seems to know the way. Then I look at you, and the world's all right with me. Just one look at you, and I know it's gonna be a lovely day.
America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Guy James Show. Coming to you from the Blue Waters and Sandy Beaches of beautiful Fort Myers, Naples area, Florida, on this Tuesday, October 27th, where is the time going? I'm telling you, how many of you are about my age? Do you know how I had a birthday over the weekend, and it's just another day, although I do want to thank everybody for your emails and cards and e-cards and all that stuff, and some other people that I work with made my day a very, very nice birthday. My wife made me a cake, and some other friends got me a cake, and I celebrated in just good old-fashioned birthday style. Got a free massage from a masseuse. Let me see what else I got. I got a free fruit smoothie. Got a new money clip. I don't have any money to put in it, but I got that. So I had a really nice birthday, and I want to thank all of you for contributing to that. Good old October 25th. It's the day they founded the United Nations, you know. They had to do something special, and so they did that in honor of world peace for my birthday on the exact day I was born. You can look that up and you can tell exactly how old I am, right? Hey, thanks for joining us this afternoon. We've been talking about right-wing think tanks and the power that they have, and the power that they have really is in the right-wing media machine. These groups get together and cook up whatever it is they want to cook up to enrich themselves and their friends and to gain power, and I'm talking the kind of power where you can control the people of the United States and make them do your bidding. And some of these groups have proven they can do that, and they do it through the media. And they have many representatives out in the media, and they have thousands and thousands of hours on radio and TV all year long, outdoing the left by a tremendous, tremendous margin. And, you know, just an example, what I was, you know, we all heard, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago that the Dow went over 10,000, I forget what it was now, a couple of weeks ago at least, and now it's hovering right around, what is it, 9,800 and something today. You know, they're talking about the great news on Wall Street, the great news on Wall Street. Well, what does that mean? What exactly does that mean? It's great news for whom? Normally, great news on Wall Street means is a lot of times filters down to good news for the public. There's more capital available. And then, you know, there's more money available for our small businessmen, who happen to be the most important business people in the United States, the small businessmen. They're the true capitalist. When things are good on Wall Street, there's money available, small business grows, we're better off. It's not happening this time. And it's fascinating to me that the so-called liberal media and other media, they haven't yet, they haven't exactly reported any kind of a distinction between relatively good news on Wall Street, especially for companies like Goldman, and what it means in reality. And the reality is that it isn't doing anything for the American public at this time. Yes, the big investment firms and Goldman Sachs and the banks, yes, they're doing well. They're doing very well. But ordinary people aren't doing well. The banks have taken the opportunity to take the bailout money, use it to invest, not put it out for loans to average Joe American, raising their interest rates on credit cards like crazy. They're profiting like never before off of credit cards. Limiting the loans that they give the small business people. They're pushing their profits up. But what is it, what's it doing for the average guy? The people that have savings accounts in the banks, your mother, your father, people you know that have put away money for a nest egg to draw interest. It hasn't done anything for them, has it? The cost of capital for the big banks has gone down to virtually nothing. And the people who have done the right thing all along and saved, they're the ones that are getting gouged. The people that had CDs and savings account, bailout program screwed them royal. And so what's happening? Wall Street said, hey, we're doing good over here. We're up to 9,800. We were over 10,000. Get your money back into Wall Street. You know what? It's always the little man that gets shafted on Wall Street. Always the little guy. And so interest is practically nothing in the bank. You've got your CDs and your savings account. You're not making any money off of it at all. And so they're encouraging you to get back in the stock market. The Dow is going up. There's no question about it. But to what end? If it doesn't mean anything for the whole rest of the economy, who cares if it goes to 20,000? If Joe Lunchbucket and Sally Lunchbucket don't prosper off of it, it doesn't mean a damn thing. Nothing. Good old-fashioned unfettered capitalism. I'll tell you one thing. The Glass-Steagall Act better come back. It was taken away, what, in 1999? It was, I forget what year it started, what, 1935, something like that, to keep this whole thing from happening again, like happened to on the crash of Wall Street, the Glass-Steagall Act. It kept investment houses and banks separate. And so they did away with it, and Bill Clinton, I believe, happily signed it, getting rid of it. And what happened? We had this crash. And the wall between investment banking and good old savings banking and you know, local banking, it was torn down. And look what it's gotten us. They talk about capitalism. You know what capitalism is? Capitalism, when the guy next door to you dips into his savings account or goes out and borrows some money and builds a store. He and his wife, they put in a store. They put in a clothing store or a little convenience mart or whatever. And they use their capital. Their capital. That's what capitalism is. Taking their capital and risking it, putting it at risk. They have taken all of the risk when they build their little business, whatever it may be. It's a little sporting goods store, a little golfing store, whatever. It's their capital. It is pure capitalism. They take their capital and they put it at risk. And we see these people driving around with, stop socialism, we got to have capitalism. You tell me if what went on in Wall Street was any kind of capitalism whatsoever. You tell me if that was capitalism. These guys ahead of these big investment houses, you tell me if they're capitalist. Whose money did they risk? Not theirs. Oh, no. Not theirs. They didn't take their money out and risk it. Uh-uh. And when things went down the tubes, did they? No. They're back at it. They risked somebody else's money. They took all sorts of chances with this wild leveraging of like 30 to 1 going on because the Glass-Steagall Act is gone. The wall was torn down between the banks and the investment houses, and they're all merged together. Hell, American Express, I believe, now is officially a bank. So they gambled other people's money. Billions and hundreds of billions of other people's money. Made themselves incredibly rich. Just incredibly rich. Risking someone else's money. That's not capitalism. That is not capitalism at all. And yet we hear, because we want to regulate these people who are practicing something that is not capitalism, we hear the socialist charge. We hear the socialism charge because Barack Obama saved Chrysler and General Motors. Now, who knows? And I don't want to sit here and act like I know, because I do not. Who knows if that will yet turn out to be a good idea? I hope and pray that it does, because those are two bastions of American business that need to hang around, General Motors and Chrysler. To have either one of them fail would just be terrible. Thousands and thousands of people. We need to have those jobs. And the Obama administration saw what was coming. They took office right in the middle of what was happening. I mean, these huge banking and investment houses going down the tubes last fall. We were on the precipice of a Great Depression. And we hear people criticizing now the bailout. There's a lot of things about it I don't like. But when you stop and look at it, in total, what were they to do? Were they going to just sit there and let the banks continue to go down, and these ones that were too big to fail and all that, just let it completely crash and head into a deep, deep depression like what happened in 1929, 1932, right in through there? Did they want to even take a chance on that happening again? I don't know whether yet it will turn out to be a right or wrong issue, but why would anybody sit around and take a chance if throwing money at it they thought would help, or then do it? You know, conservatives are awfully good at doing nothing. They're good at going to war. Oh, they never saw a war they didn't like. But when it comes to anything else, they're really good at just sitting around and doing nothing. I hear so many people talk about when the Democrats are power, look out, they'll legislate and they'll do things. Yeah. That's kind of like the idea. That's kind of what government does. They get together and they work for the people. They're what they're supposed to work for the people. Republicans would just, if they had their way, they'd go to Washington, they'd occupy their offices, and I don't think they'd have any sessions day after day. They wouldn't bring up any bills except to anything, something that would enrich themselves. But let's get this idea out, and I want to talk about that more in a little bit about the media once again. And you talk about me harping on it. Yes, I am harping on it. I'm sick of it. I'm sick of getting beat to death in the media. But here we got Wall Street heading right back to their old tricks. They took the bailout money, and what did they do with it? They're enriching themselves. They're paying themselves monster bonuses, and we have the government stepping in now and saying, oh, no, you can't have bonuses like that. And we're talking about half-dozen firms where Obama is stepping in and saying you can't have bonuses like this. What about the hundreds of other firms where the bonuses are running wild that have paid the TARP money back? They're not doing anything about that. And these classic conservatives are saying, well, they shouldn't because it's capitalism. It's capitalism to let the market run where it will. Let it flow like water wherever it will go, wherever it ends up. That's great. That's capitalism. You're talking about phony capitalism there. As I mentioned, risking your money is capitalism. Risking somebody else's money is not. Let's put that to bed. That's stupid. I don't think we're done with this yet. I don't think we're done with this banking problem. I don't think we're done with this Wall Street problem. I think if there are no regulations put in place, I think we allow these people to go on leveraging money like they did before. I think if they're allowed to go on like spending money, gambling money like drunken sailors, we'll end up right back there again, even worse the next time. And the next time might be even worse. Because some of the places where we find money around the world, China and others, are getting a little tired of having this dollar devalued down to where it is right now. They're getting a little tired of Uncle Sam saying, well, we'll just print more money and keep the dollar sound in our debts to you, and we'll repay them, yada, 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 yada. We'll see. Didn't intend to talk about the economy that long, but once you get started on it these days, you can't stop, can you? I hear from many of you. I hear about how you're doing. I hear about some of you looking for jobs. I hear about some of you haven't had any jobs. I hear about some of you can't sleep at night because your unemployment may be cut off soon. I hear from people who may be thrown out of their home soon, that they've already gotten the notice that they've got to be out in 30 days. I read the newspapers. I read the business reports that we haven't seen the end of the home foreclosure crisis. I read the news that the banks are not cooperating with new home loans or adjusting the mortgages for people. I read all this. We're not near the end of this yet. We've just come through the three highest months of foreclosure that we've seen so far. We've got many, many arms ready to turn over, ARM, adjustable rate mortgages ready to reset. We will see inflation. We are not near the end of this. But yes, those on Wall Street have found a way to make money out of it once again. And they will continue to. Capitalism, you know. Capitalism. I believe in capitalism. I always have. I've been a capitalist myself. But I've risked my money in business. And if I lost, I took my lumps. That's how it is in pure capitalism. You put your money up. If you win, good for you. If you lose your money. Well, how did that work on Wall Street this time? All of us took the lumps. All of us jumped in and put money. As I like to say, they privatized the profits and they socialized the losses. That was real socialism right there. There was a monstrous loss on Wall Street, and so we all got to pitch in together and pay the losses. See, it depends who's got the microphone. It depends who's got the newspapers, who's got the TV, the Fox networks, and all that. It depends on how the story is told. The capitalist, the true capitalist, lost. And the real socialism was splitting this debt up amongst the American people and paying it off and allowing the fat cats to continue their journey of greed and corruption. That's real socialism. We didn't get to share in the profits. We're not getting to share in the profits right now. We're not getting to share in these monster bonuses and these fantastic profits of companies like Goldman Sachs. We're not sharing in those. We didn't share in the monstrous profits the AIG made for many years. Oh, no. But when they lost money, we got to share in that, all right. Capitalism, my ass. That's the purest sense of purest example of socialism I can come up with. Heads they win, tails we lose. They couldn't lose. Man, what do you think? I gave you the phone numbers, but the phones are down today. We are on this Tuesday, October 27th. Probably the leaves up north, people up north, the leaves are falling off the trees now. Don't know. I haven't been up there in a while. I'll see. The end of the week in Washington, although the weather in Washington's a little different. I hope it's nice when we're up there. I hope it's not really cold. We're looking at about 87 here today. Nice day, sunny day here in southwest Florida. We're going to take a quick break, and I will be back with you in just a moment or two. So I hope you'll stick around.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool, and he never